Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Life Science Rundown. This is Nicholas Kattman with the FDA Group. Before we jump into our discussion for today, just a little bit about the FDA Group. We help life science companies in the areas of quality assurance, regulatory affairs, clinical operations, commissioning, qualification, and validation, as well as CMC. We offer three different engagement models, which are consulting, staff augmentation, and full-time employee recruitment. So if you ever find yourself in need, just head over to the fdagroup.com and check us out and get in touch. So today I am speaking with Nick Klingensmith. Hey, Nick.
Hey, Nick, how are you?
I'm doing great. So we know each other from our first job, and we actually went to the same university, UMass. So we have a long history together. So why don't you introduce yourself and we'll talk about what the topic is for today.
All right. Absolutely. My name is Nick Klingensmith, and I am the four-time cancer survivor, type 1 diabetic and recovering alcoholic who became an obstacle course racer and defied it all. Been in sales now for 22 wonderful years, starting out in telecom with Mr. Kattman here. Prior to that, I was actually born on the island of Martha's Vineyard. And despite what people may think, that does not make me rich. It's the rich people who go to visit there. It's the people like me who serve the muffins and coffees and build the houses and do all the blue collar work, which lent me 4 awesome years at the University of Massachusetts before getting into telecom. And after 5 years, I moved down to Florida, where I've been at for the last better part of 2 decades now, working in logistics sales until very recently, where I left to become a motivational speaker and mindset coach.
Okay, very cool. So I know before we started recording this session, we talked about kind of what the topic for today was and what we wanted the audience to get out of it. So why don't I pass the baton over to you?
Absolutely. There is a fundamental disconnect between leadership, frontline management, and frontline employees, especially when it pertains to remote employees. Now, I'm going to tell you a stat right now that I don't know if it's true, but I heard it, so it must be true, that 63% of people on LinkedIn right now are looking for other jobs. And I am one of the most self-driven people ever. Now, that's not true, but it's, you know, I'm going to put myself up there for a lot. And I can tell you that my last several months working in logistics, it was getting darker and darker earlier and earlier. My walls were getting smaller every day as I began to feel more and more disconnected from the company that I was working from. When people are on an island, and I'm going to say specifically salespeople, right? We hire these kids out of school, out of the bar, expecting them to be introverted, high energy, high tempo. People buy from people. And then we shove them in a closet with a laptop and expect them to be producers. Now, I understand that a lot of people prefer that environment where they are quiet and left alone, but I'm still going to contest that people still need people and some sort of belonging and sense of purpose to be at our best. And I feel that that disconnect affects so many people and prevents them from being their best, both at work and in their personal lives.
So what do you think is the disconnect that leadership and management is having?
You know, it's a lot of things happened since, say, 2019, right? Because when everybody was working in an office, it was easier to see and communicate with people and to be part of a team, to be part of belonging. What's happened is that even the companies that have now gone back to the office, a lot of the leadership is still siloed. You know, a lot of the people are still very focused on what's going on in their little hen house and not necessarily concerned about how to best engage the employees. If you go back a couple of years and just look at the Googles and, you know, the whole, like, the big, I'm going to call it the culture, the business culture revolution, where all of a sudden it's like everybody's got ping pong tables. There was, you know, a lot of work with employee engagement. And since 2020, there was a lot of work with employee engagement through HR and DEIB. And yet now companies are already taking their foot off the gas on that. It seems to be an abdication of responsibility from leadership to engage their employees and actually make them part of the company.
And you think that lack of action from leadership and management is somewhat related to the fact that they have a remote workforce?
It makes it more difficult. And I'm going to give you an example of something. So I'm on LinkedIn almost all day, every day. and I'm constantly having conversations and chats with people, admittedly, mostly in sales and sales leadership, and mostly from the logistics industry, because that's where my, you know, a lot of my experience has been, but it's not just to that industry. Out of the 22 managers and leaders that I've spoken to and asked these questions and gotten answers from this month, four of them had HR training. None of them had manager training, and none of them were taught at all or even given best practices how to best communicate and work with a remote force. The type of information that I got from these guys primarily is this. They say, my people don't need to hear from me. I don't want to micromanage. However, I also had the privilege of talking to the people who work for them. And I'm getting a very different response. And those people are saying, I never hear from my manager unless I'm in trouble. They're expecting communication. They want to be led. Nobody wants to be micromanaged, but you shouldn't have to be micromanaged. Accountability is not micromanagement. Mentoring, coaching, communication is not micromanagement. And so there's a disconnect because they are seeing it differently. And when I do talk to the senior leadership, we're talking the VPs and above, they are, yes, I have good leaders. So they're abdicating their responsibility by putting a person in a position and expecting that to be the catch-all to fix all the problems. So if things were, it's like this, when your car is out of alignment, how does it run?
Not well.
And then what happens though, if you continue to let it run out of alignment?
It gets worse.
It gets further out of alignment. More, you stress the wrong parts. Things begin to break. It becomes inefficient, right? Until it breaks down. And that's what's happening is the alignment is actually, these companies are running more and more crooked. And it's not by design. Nobody's being evil here, right? People are trying to run hard. We're trying to accomplish so much. But we're forgetting that if you're going to say you have a team, you have to actually treat it like a team.
So let's say the leader and the manager, right? You said, I don't want to micromanage, right? And then the report is saying, well, I never hear from them unless I'm in trouble, right? So that I think that it essentially describes the disconnect. So what would your recommendation be? How do we, you know, how should this change? Because I think the remote work isn't a new concept.
Right.
And at the same time, we've seen a dramatic shift into a remote work environment. So there's been a dramatic shift toward remote work since COVID, right?
Yep.
So, you know, what do you think the shift needs to be with leadership and management in order to address this misconception that their reports don't want to hear from them or they don't want to come off as micromanagers?
You know, I'm going to call myself out because back in like 2017, I was responsible for three different offices or so. I routinely left the other leaders off our calls, sometimes by design, because I simply wasn't comfortable managing by conference call. Like, I didn't feel it was that effective, but the fact is I wasn't that effective and I didn't make the effort to be that effective. So what I actually did was disconnect and distance those people from being part of my team. And then, get this, I'd get upset with them for not following the program. Whose fault was that? Right? So the answer to this in these days is this. Don't be afraid to communicate. In fact, over communicate. Because I'll give you a different example now where, you know, last year where I had several employees remote. And oftentimes the people in my office were remote, we would communicate often. Communication seems to be the missing ingredient here. We've tend to drifted from just authentic communication. So one of the things, the most powerful things that I would actually do to my team is what I call the drop-in call. I would just Microsoft Teams them, you know, and drop in, not to check in on them, not to like manage, just to virtually stop by your desk. Lean over and say, hey, how's it going? Have that connection, have that 2-minute commercial, that 2-minute conversation that just opens up communication, lets this person know that you can actually converse with them and have a conversation with them. The other thing is that just simply isn't happening is to over communicate expectations, you know, share the vision. Like the last company I was in, we might get some company information every couple of weeks, but largely we didn't feel like we were part of a company. we should know. We should be having a virtual Monday morning meeting every week where we're getting that information about what is the company aspiring to? You know, what are some of the challenges we're facing? What's going on in the industry? What roles are available for those who want to, you know, move up the ladder? Just communicate. The team is the sum of all parts. And in the absence of information, people come to their own conclusions, and they're usually not good ones.
Yeah, actually, it's interesting you said that. Whenever there is difficult news that needs to be delivered, I'm a huge advocate of sharing that and being fully transparent. Because to your point, everyone is going to create a story. And my argument is that 9 times out of 10, the story that gets created in the absence of the truth is worse than the truth.
Absolutely.
So I would subscribe to that. I got a couple questions. So we talked about, and it seems like some of this disconnect has been accelerated by the remote work environment. So are you saying we just need to adapt to the remote work environment, or are you potentially recommending that we go back to face-to-face or try to increase the amount of face-to-face interaction?
You know, I want to be clear that I can't speak universally, right? Because not every company is the same, not every job is the same, not every role and, you know, the way in which they need to communicate is the same. That said, over time, we're only going to see more of this remoteness. We have more technology and ability to communicate now than ever before. And it's probably only going to increase the effectiveness of how we do that. Yeah, I think it's a necessary skill to be able to lead and to communicate with other people is to be able to do that. Mm. I was actually a holdout. I hated video calls. I did. I never like any technology until it's been around for a while. I think I'm just older than I am. But as I started doing it, there's a value of being able to just see who you're talking to. And it's not intrusive. It's how hard is it to just dial up somebody? But what we have to do is remove ourselves from it. So when I told you I would make impromptu calls, right? If somebody didn't pick up, I didn't go to the worst case scenario in my head. I didn't assume they're ignoring me. I didn't assume they don't want to talk to me or that they're screwing off. I assume they're doing something and just couldn't take the call. And that's why I'll call 2 or 3 people at once to be able to do that. Mm. But these are skills that need to be taught, because here's the other thing. If you are the leader in remote environment, because if the team is remote, there's a good chance that the leader's remote, they're focused on what's in front of them. You know, most leaders are doers. Like they're actually part of the team, and they have tactical responsibilities that they're also supposed to do. And it is a lot easier to work and focus on what's directly in front of me, what's on my plate, instead of trying to do an outreach to involve other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the things as you were talking that kind of jumped into my head is we're using the word communicate a lot. And one of the things that I've come to realize over time is people are communicating and they're doing a good job of communicating. But what I think they are intending to do and they're not doing is connecting. And I think that maybe there should be some sort of awareness that communicating and connecting are two different things. And I think they both have their own value, right? So I need to communicate the company's vision, mission, processes, et cetera. But I also need to connect with my people to make them feel safe, secure, that I care, that I'm here to support them, that I'm willing to actively listen as opposed to just hear them and then dismiss them and make them go away, right?
Absolutely. You know, communicating is when I get everybody all on the call for an all hands on Monday. I tell them what's going on in the industry, what's going on in the company, what are the directives and objectives for the week. And I say, go get them. That's communication. Mm-hmm. That's not connecting. Connecting is when I ask you questions. And when I listen, active listen is how we can communicate, or I'm sorry, connect with people and to get outside ourselves. You know, especially when you're talking to a computer screen all day, it's so easy to focus on everything that's right or wrong in your world. It makes it, if we have a way to isolate ourselves even further, whereas if we're connecting to other people, it's okay if it's done remotely. I mean, it's about sharing experiences and just learning what other people's perspectives are and listening to them. And it's not about showing them that you care, right? It's about caring, like actually care. If you don't care, don't ask the question. Like, nobody wants fake. That's going to make it even worse, right? Like, there are people that we've had in our lives, I'm sure, who are just, they're about the ones and zeros and that's it. I can respect that. You know, it's all right. It's the fake ones that make you hate everyone. And then all of a sudden you don't want to do anything at all. You know, I believe one of the things that a lot of salespeople are taught, and you'll remember this too, is when you walk into somebody's office, look for a picture on the wall. Oh my God, it makes me want to throw up. No, don't. Like, if there's something that you can truly connect on, do it. But if I'm over here like, hey, Nick, you have a globe in the background. You like globes?
That's fake.
It's fake. We can build natural rapport through a natural conversation by genuinely taking interest in the other person and what they're trying to achieve.
Well, I guess one of the things that, and again, to maybe go back to the very beginning of the conversation, right? They say, well, I don't want to come off as a micromanager, right? And you say, well, you need to over communicate. So now I'm listening to this and I'm saying, okay, well, let me meet you halfway, right? I'll subscribe to the fact that, yes, I need to communicate with my people more so they don't feel like on an island. That they're on an island and that I'm only communicating to them when things are wrong. But I'm still hesitant because I don't want to annoy them and I don't want to, and maybe I won't feel like I'm micromanaging them, but I'm still concerned that I might be doing things wrong. So what are some of the parameters that listeners should take into consideration in order to make sure that they're maybe not going too far beyond what's reasonable or maybe not falling too short?
You know, I had a great example and I'm going to try to bring it back to my head here, but accountability is not micromanagement. So if you're working for me, and accountability is also part of communication, and I expect that certain things are to be done, and you and I are communicating Tuesday at 4 o'clock and I'm holding you accountable, I am asking you, did you perform X, Y, and Z? And as you're telling me what you did or didn't do, when you didn't do something, it's for me to explore why with you, right? If I just demand, or then I'm not managing, I'm demanding, I'm just barking out orders, right? There might be a reason you didn't do it that I can help you with. And that's a big part of accountability. Is it time management? Is it skill? Did you willfully disregard me? And, you know, did you just do something and get sidetracked? And that's something we can overlook. It gets really micro when I try to do your job for you. But I talked about this last week. There was a guy who worked for me back in the day. And at the time he was like 55 and I was like 36. All right. So he must've loved getting orders from me. And he was falling on his face. And I was told that he's got 30 days to get it together or let him go. I convinced my boss that I wanted a little more time, and I put him on a performance plan that was 90 to 120 days long. It was as micro as I can think of. And I wouldn't have put the plan together if I was not prepared to hold him accountable to those tasks. Because if I holding him accountable without empowering him to perform the tasks or without involving myself, that's micromanagement of the worst kind. I used to have a boss who, we had this old CRM system, and he would count the notes every day, but he wouldn't read them. And he'd ask me questions about my accounts. And I'm like, dude, it's in the CRM. But he would count them every day. Okay, so he's managing the wrong things, very micro. But if a good micromanager would be somebody who read my notes and asked insightful questions about them. That's not micromanagement. That's management. Like, that's leadership.
Right.
The other thing is simply micro obnoxiousness. Now, so I had a very direct conversation with that rep, and I was like, here's what's going to happen. And I told him, I am going to micromanage these expectations. We are going to talk every single day. I'm going to make it a priority, and we're going to dig in. Well, he got off the plan in 60 days. In 60 days, he was performing better than needed to be. Said, great, we don't need to micro this anymore. Let's do a weekly check-in and then just back on our regular, you know, schedule. For the next five quarters, he was the number one rep in the company out of 200 reps. I never did his job for him. I held him accountable to doing his job. I prioritized holding him accountable to doing his job. He could have quit. I'm surprised he didn't, but instead he took ownership of it. He understood that he was the reason why he was where he was because he had stopped putting in the work. It did show that I care because I cared to take that time, you know, to set up every single day and meet with him and dig into the details. But none of it was about looking for a gotcha, right? Like if he fell short on something, you know, it wasn't to scold him. It was to understand how I can help and support him. Because the other thing too, is sometimes as leaders, we set out these expectations and it's not that they're not realistic, but there are things that we don't consider. So it's important that we are listening to kind of what's going on the ground too.
Yeah. Yeah. What was the, if you had to boil it down to one thing, what was the big change between that particular individual before and after the performance improvement program?
The conversation we had when I rolled it out,
it wasn't
polite. Mm-hmm. It was very direct. It was very uncomfortable. And the uncomfortable part was I stripped away every excuse that he could throw up there. Mm-hmm. And the social contract that we had made together was understanding that you are wholly responsible for what you do from here. Because here's the thing about a lot of sales reps. And by the way, I don't think this is just for sales reps, but when people become disengaged with their primary function of their job, they start looking for other things to do. And that usually means getting involved with other people's jobs and complaining about other people's jobs and creating issues and drama where they don't exist because it's just easier than doing their job. I took all that stuff off the table. Mm-hmm. I gave him nowhere to run. His choice was do the work or you're fired.
Mm.
That's it. None of it matters to me. You are wholly responsible for everything that happens from this point forth. We're going to overcommunicate. I will not listen to it when you tell me, oh, I was putting out fires all day. No, you tell me when there's smoke. You don't tell me when there's fire. We are in this together. There's no excuse that I'm going to give you for not holding up my end, and I'm not willing to accept one and back in return. And so he made a decision to get it together, to simply do the work. I wasn't asking him for anything that he wasn't hired to do. And that's, you know, he got that kickstart. And that's what he needed to, he's an adult, he's a professional, he just fell off track.
Yeah. You know, you talked about the, you know, talk to me when there's smoke, not fire. And I'm just trying to think about how times have changed when it's face-to-face versus remote. And I think maybe, and then I'm also trying to think about those drop-in calls that you had, right? I think there are clues when you're working in an office that you don't get to see when you're in a remote working environment, right? Let's say somebody is showing up late every day. You're not going to see that in a remote work environment. Or they're always unshaven or they're unkept. You might not see that in a video. You know, they might be able to kind of disguise that. They might be able to put on a happy face for that 30-minute call. But the rest of the day, they're really just not vibing really well, right? So maybe that's one of the, you know, kind of bigger issues that we as leaders and managers struggle with the remote workforce is a lot of these clues that we were able to pick up on when we were in a face-to-face work environment, we're not able to pick up on with a remote work environment.
So now we'll go back to micromanagement. If I'm calling somebody at 8:01 every morning to make sure they're up live and at their desk or right.
Well, you shouldn't be doing that.
I shouldn't be doing that. That's ineffective. And what it is doing is it's building distrust between the individual and I'm focusing on the wrong things. There are certain things I do have to assume that my guys are doing. And the reason I have to assume it is because I can't verify it, not without taking more effort than it's worth. Now, as much as I told you I was willing to make that effort to rehab that rep, he had to do the work. If he didn't, there was no other warning. Mm-hmm. He was gone. You have to be willing to let go of people who simply aren't doing the work. And we're talking about leadership a lot here, but the fact is this: leaders can do better to engage with their people. But when the people are not doing the work, it's actually not the leader's fault. There's only one person responsible for doing the work, and that's the person.
Yeah. Well, I guess what I was trying to say is that the job of the leader and manager, I think, has become incrementally more difficult.
Yeah.
Because of the fact that when we're not in the face-to-face work environment, I'm not saying that you need to call them every morning at 8:01 to see if they're working. What I am saying is you're missing all of those clues.
Yeah.
Whether it be the time they arrive, how they dress, how is their face, how are they talking, what's their tone, what's their enthusiasm, are they coming in bright-eyed, or are they kind of like, you know, there's a lot of different clues where you could might be able to pull somebody aside and say, how you feeling, how's the family, whatever the case may be, right? A lot of these might be overlooked, and it might be, you know, kind of the German no news is good news type thing, right? So my point would be, okay, so we as leaders and managers know we're missing these clues, okay? But that doesn't mean that everything that was happening in a face-to-face work environment isn't continuing in a remote work environment. So in that case, what are we supposed to do as leaders and managers to make sure that if someone is starting to slip, that we're catching it before it turns into a fire or a big snowball?
So this is where micromanagement is your friend. It's just that you have to be careful about what you choose to micromanage. And what I mean by that is, so when I was running a remote team last year, we had an 8:15 a.m. call every day. They're supposed to start work at 8 o'clock or earlier. I'm assuming they did, or I chose to not care that they didn't. I chose to only care that they were prepared for the 8:15 call, which what they're supposed to discuss on that call were, what are their objectives for the day, for the week? What are the issues I need to know about? Where do they need help? So some of those clues would be, if you're not prepared one day, I'm going to choose to ignore that because I can't be everywhere and I can't be all things. If you're starting to be unprepared more than one day, that's my warning sign that, hey, Nick, I want to remind you that your workday starts before 8:15 a.m. This meeting is for you to tell me your objectives for the day so that I can help support you and I can communicate information. But if you're not coming to that call prepared, I can't help you. So I want to remind you that your workday starts before 8:15 a.m. because there are clues like that, right? And the other thing is that if people are calling their shot and giving you their objectives, we have to hold them accountable. So that means whether it be at the end of each day, at the end of each week, or however that cadence of communication is, Nick, you told me you were going to do these three things. How did it go? Now, my job is not just to record those things and move on. So if you're giving me objectives that I don't think can be achieved, it's also my job to comment on that. And if you're biting a lot off there, is that something you can really get done in a day? You know, like if you're just like, I'm going to close 10 accounts today. And I write that down at the end of the day, I'm like, did you close 10 accounts? No. So, you know, whose fault is that I allowed that to be a thing, right? So when you give me those objectives, it's important that I listen and make sure that we're on the same page about what you're trying to achieve, that it's actually aimed and directed at achieving the larger goals that we're working on together. But then when I go to hold you accountable and ask you how you performed on those tasks, if there's a consistent failure to achieve those things, I need to start digging in about what's going on throughout the course of the day.
Makes sense.
It's also important to remember that it is my job as the leader in that conversation, though, to make sure that I'm understanding the shot that you're calling. Because, you know, if, and again, I'm just going to pick on sales, but if I'm like, hey, Nick, my job is to go back to conversion here. Nick, my number one goal today is to hit 20 doors. Bro, that's your job, not a goal. What's your goal today?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to make 40 dials. Again, that's your job. That's not something you set out as a goal. Like, what is the actual objective we are trying to achieve together?
That sounds like they're confusing the amount of activity as opposed to productivity.
And I think this is something that And this isn't easy, okay? Because what I'm talking about now is critical thinking. There's a difference, and it is hard to extract tangible objectives from somebody. Isn't always the easiest thing, because oftentimes they are only focused on what their job description is. Hit this many doors, make this many calls, set this many appointments, do this, like, you know, check all these marks throughout the course of the day. That's great, but it doesn't need a manager to run a checklist, right? So my role as a leader is to help you articulate what a good tangible objective is, such as move this account from X to Z, you know, complete this project, bring in these other stakeholders, like things that will help move the needle on whatever it is that you're trying to achieve. Mm-hmm. Tangible benchmarks that move the needle forward.
Yeah. Now, I made another note while we were talking. You referenced, you had talked to, I think it was 22 or 23 people this month or last month, and four of them had received HR training. And I know there are leadership trainings and there are management trainings and all sorts of different trainings, sales trainings, and so on and so forth. Do you think with the dramatic increase in remote workforces that there has to be a specific category for remote workforce training from a leadership and management standpoint?
You know, whether it be through, I think it would be a great product for one of these sales training companies to put together a remote sales management program.
Mm.
I don't think it would sell, because I feel that most of the companies don't feel they have this issue, or they don't realize that they are the issue. I do think it's something that should be trained. And if, let's say, I'm still in logistics right now and I want to hire a new manager to run a remote sales team, I am now qualified and equipped to give them level one training, because I looked at all my own shortcomings and how I can solve those problems. I've investigated by other reps in across the industry and other industries and management and leadership, and began to identify some of these gaps. So I could train a new manager on how to effectively communicate with their team. Doesn't make them the best, but it's more training than they're getting now, simply by looking at things I did well, things I didn't do well, taking all the information that I've accumulated through multiple conversations, and then put that together. I think one of the biggest issues with so many companies these days is that they are promoting people like a Band-Aid. You know, they're putting, I'll tell you what, in the SaaS industry, people are spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on technology without any implementation, not knowing how they're going to, you know, get user adoption, no program in place for compliance. They're bringing it in, hoping it's going to solve all their problems without wanting to get involved. And there's so much apathy of like, oh, just put a person there and that'll fix it. You know, people always say that the best sales reps make the worst managers. And I contest that all day, because here's why: the best managers were the best sales reps, or at least they were very good, right? The reason bad sales reps or good sales reps don't always make that transition to good managers, because people don't train them how to be a good manager. So they gravitate naturally towards what they were good at, or they gravitate towards the micro because they don't know how to do it.
One of the things you said is, you know, for the people listening, how do they know if this is an issue within their own workforce? So somebody's listening and they have a remote team, and one of the things that they might be asking themselves is, you know, is this type of discontent or the beginning of it occurring within my workforce? So how do they diagnose that?
Well, the first answer to the question is it's happening, period. Except that it's happening. The amount of, my people love me, I talk to them all the time. You just have to understand they're complaining. They're just not complaining to you. I think it's important to have uncomfortable conversations. So one thing I actually did a couple of years ago, and this isn't about remote, but I hadn't been reviewed from my boss in like a year. And I actually wanted some good feedback. And by good, I meant like actionable feedback. So I brought my directors and managers together and I said, guys, here's a review. I need you to be honest. It's for your own benefit. Like, let's lay it out here. I need some feedback on how I can be a better leader. Like, we have to be more vulnerable and willing to not necessarily have all the answers. We have to be willing to admit that maybe not all my people love me. And it's okay. I'm not trying to be friends with everybody. I'm trying to make them successful. I'm trying to make the company successful. So the number one thing is put the ego away. Two is you build bridges through empathy. And it takes action and effort to understand people. And the way that you get them to open up to you is by being vulnerable with them. And that's something that I have just adopted as a superpower now, because there are so many things I'm willing to call myself out on. And it's liberating, because I'm not embarrassed by my prior behaviors anymore or things that I could have done better, because I'm learning from them and I'm using them as a strength to help others. So if managers and leaders can take that approach with their team and say, hey, you know what? Maybe I'm not the greatest thing that's ever happened to this company right now, but I can be. Let me find out what's going on with my people. And the thing is this, you also have to understand, you're not going to make everybody happy. All right. If you've got 10 people on your staff, there are three of them who are simply not going to be with you in a year, period. It's just how it goes. There's going to be turnover. There's going to be disgruntled people. And when we focus on the lowest common denominator, we're ignoring the people who need and deserve our support the most. So the leaders have to just be focused on being the best version of themselves and work on getting better every day. But don't worry about being all things to all people, because it's not possible.
Right. In terms of vulnerability, there's a book by Brené Brown called, she's written multiple books. The one that I've read is Dare to Lead. And I think in all of her books, she touches on vulnerability. And so that's a really good book. One of the things that I think I've kind of learned is when I ask people questions about themselves, they like me. And when I tell people things about myself, they trust me. And that means being vulnerable, not bragging about how awesome right. I am and how I've never made a mistake. You mentioned when I asked, you know, how to diagnose it, and you said, well, just accept it's happening, and they're complaining, they're just not complaining to you. I call it the CEO veil, because I'm a CEO, but it could be a leader or manager veil, which is, as hard as you try to remove it, there is a reality that the person, when there's a manager employee relationship, and one of them has the ability to fire, there is a natural defense mechanism that I need to think twice before I speak. And I have to not just blurt out everything that comes to my mind, because the reality is the person sitting across from me, if they don't react in the way I think they're going to react, they have the power to end my career, you know? And so you can try really, really hard. And I'll tell you, Nick, I try every day to break down those barriers and make people feel as safe and secure as I can. And every now and again, I have, one of my, somebody that reports to me, we have different levels, right? But, somebody that directly reports to me saying that somebody reports to her, says, oh, well, actually, this is the reality. And I'm like, why didn't they just tell me? And they're like, Nick, you're the CEO. They're not going to tell you everything, you know? So I think it's important for people to know. And you can try as hard as you want. And you'll be able to, I would say, reduce the thickness of the veil and allow more to pass through. But you'll never be able to completely remove it.
Oh, 100%. And you're right, for so many reasons, right? Like, because at the end of the day, and dude, we go back 20 years, but if I'm working for you, like you said, you've got my mortgage in your hand. There's, and you have meetings that I'm not in.
Mm-hmm.
And naturally, sometimes I'm wondering what you're talking about on those meetings. And it's going to create a layer. And as a CEO, this isn't camp. Everybody doesn't get a vote. Like, you're making the decisions and you have to make tough decisions. And so there's also a certain degree of separation that you need to keep. Like, that's why it's lonely at the top, right? So you want to make yourself approachable. You want people to understand that you are authentic and honest. It doesn't mean they're going to like you, and it doesn't mean they're going to like everything you have to say. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that was so hard for me to get over, so very hard, is I would bend over backwards for people. I would lie to my bosses to protect people. I would lie to HR to protect people. And then they'd fuck me for it.
Mm.
And it was so easy to say, well, screw that. I'm not going to help anybody anymore. But then who does that make me, right? So you just have to understand that I'm trying to do the best I can for the most amount of people with what I have. It's not going to be the best for, you know, everybody across the board. And I mean, one of the worst things as leaders, right, is when one of those things happen behind closed doors and maybe somebody important has to get cut. You can't talk about it. I can't come out of the room and be like, hey guys, here's why I fired Tony. But if I don't, they're going, you know, the rumor mill is just going to have to circulate, and I just have to let it. And that's sort of an unfortunate thing. And sometimes you can't say all the secrets. Sometimes you just can't say all the things, right? It's not your place to talk about somebody else's business. And again, as the leader, you have to make the best decision. That's the best decision for the company,
mm-hmm.
which means the most amount of the people. It's impossible to make a decision that's a positive decision for every single individual person. And if you try to make every single person happy, there's one person who is guaranteed to be unhappy, and that's you.
Yeah. Well, I'm really glad that you just used that sentence, because it's a great way to wrap up this podcast. Because literally, whenever I and the executive team are in a pickle and we have to make a difficult decision, the question that allows us to find our, you know, the right answer to the question is, what is in the best interest of the company? And I would say that that is something that people should keep in their toolbox, is ask yourself when you don't know what to do, what is in the best interest of the company? Quick side note, you're probably going to end up doing things that are the most difficult, not really what you wanted to do, but at least you know that's the right decision. So, well, this has been really useful. So I'm going to throw a few different questions at you as we wrap up. One, what would you like to leave the audience with? Number two is, if you want to kind of shout out your book and where people can find you, that would be great. And I would say those are probably the last two.
All right. Since a lot of what we had talked about before was resilience, building a resilient team. And so the one thing that I would say to individuals working remotely at all towards building resilience, and this goes for leaders too, is to stay present. What's right in front of you, right here, right now, because it's so easy for me on this call to look at the emails or LinkedIn or think about all the things that I need to do in my personal life. And if I'm doing that, there's two things that are happening. Number one, I'm adding unnecessary anxiety and stress to my life. And number two, I am not being a good leader to you because I'm not present. One of the best ways to stave off that anxiety is to simply focus on what I can control that's right in front of me, that gets me closer to my goals right now. You can't be all things to all people. So what is the most impactful activity that I can do that's right in front of me right now? Can't worry about the bills 3 months from now. Just be present, because that's where you can act.
Mm-hmm.
As far as finding me, the book Through the Fire, which is my memoir, is available on Amazon and Kindle. God willing, about 3 weeks after this airs, the new book, Selling Inspired, Unleashing Your Warrior Mindset for Sales Professionals, should be out there. And I am everywhere on the internet at Stride Motivation, and can book speaking gigs at stridemotivation.com.
Okay, awesome. Thank you very much, Nick. And to everyone, as always, if you find conversations like this valuable, please share it with a colleague or your professional network. If you haven't already, subscribe to get updates of new episodes at thefdagroup.com/podcast and follow the FDA Group on LinkedIn. If you'd like to connect about project or resource needs, head over to thefdagroup.com to get in touch, or feel free to connect with me personally on LinkedIn. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll see y'all next time.